Robert Kraft, along with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, have their 27th playoff win and their 8th conference championship together. And they're bound for Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis.
It's the Patriots versus the Philadelphia Eagles in Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis after another Tom Brady-led comeback over the Jacksonville Jaguars in the final minutes of the AFC Championship game. That means the Patriots are headed back to the Super Bowl to seek a 6th championship and attempt to become the first team since the 2003-2004 Patriots to repeat as Super Bowl champions. It's Monday, January 22nd. I'm Chris Gaspert. Welcome to Season Ticket. I'm joined now by the Boston Globe senior NFL writer Ben Volen. He was on the scene yesterday at Gillette Stadium as the Patriots beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 24-20 with a scintillating comeback. Ben, Patriots going to the Super Bowl for the 10th time overall in franchise history, but it certainly didn't come easily.
No, you got to give the credit to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They were no tomato cans this time.
No.
They had an excellent game plan on both sides of the ball for most of the game. I think maybe in the fourth quarter, the offense started to peter out a little bit. But
Too much zone for Jacksonville in the fourth, I thought.
But, you know, that's their defensive scheme. That's like what they do. And I thought defensive coordinator Todd Walsh had a good point during the middle of the week when he was asked about putting Jalen Ramsey on Gronkowski all game. And he's like,
yeah,
that's not what our defense is, and you don't want to reinvent the wheel for the AFC Championship game.
But his own players didn't like it. I was in the Jacksonville locker room afterwards. A.J. Boye basically ripped the defensive play calling. He said, at one point, we called four coverages in a row. They knew what was coming. Those guys weren't happy. Jalen Ramsey, too, said, you didn't hear anything from Cooks or Amendola when we were in man. I didn't think that was completely accurate. I thought that was hyperbole, but they didn't love it. Those cornerbacks didn't love what they did defensively.
Well, then A.J. Boye shouldn't commit pass interference, too, and he shouldn't like Brandon Cooks catch 6 passes for 100 yards on him. I was surprised that Cooks had that much production yesterday, and Cooks should have had another big catch and a score on the one that he dropped over the middle. But still, all the credit in the world to the Jaguars. I don't think we're sitting here today talking necessarily about how the Jaguars blew it and how they melted down in the fourth quarter. I think the Patriots were the better team. The Jaguars were a little outmanned, and you know, obviously through a four-quarter game, you know, Bortles and that offense finally kind of regressed to the mean a little bit. But
totally,
this was very well earned and hard fought. And the stat that I just can't even wrap my head around yet is Brady, this is his 16th season, you know, full season as a starting quarterback. And this is his 8th trip to the Super Bowl. Every other year he makes the Super Bowl,
yeah,
which is insane.
That's incredible. And even you can even break it down more. I mean, that's what it is. But I look at two of those seasons. So 2002 was his first full season as a starter. They didn't even make the playoffs that year. And then 2009, coming back from the ACL, he wasn't the same guy. Like, he just wasn't. So it's like when he's fully healthy with some experience, you could make a case that it's like 8 out of 14, which is amazing.
It's Tom Brady. You know, the legend continues. And, you know, the Jaguars slowed him down for 3 quarters. Then he comes through, what was he, 9? It was like 9 for 14 for 138 and 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Just unbelievable coming through in the clutch.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's amazing is this win almost seems like ho-hum for Brady and the Patriots. Well, they're only down 20-10
yeah,
in the fourth. If not for February, you know, we'd be waxing about this game. This one would go down in the annals of history forever, and instead it's like, well, another Patriots comeback.
Well, here's the thing, and you know, you were there yesterday as well. I was in the press box, and, you know, I turned to our editor, Scotty Thurston. I said, like, on the 3rd and 18, I'm like, this is where the Jacksonville gives it up. We've seen this script before, and it's a credit to the Patriots that they make comebacks like this, and Tom Brady makes comebacks like this seem routine. That they can make the spectacular seem routine is a credit to them, and it's one of the hallmarks of their dynasty. But here's a great stat, Ben. The last 4 times in the playoffs, the Patriots have been down by double digits. They've won the game.
Well, obviously the Super Bowl and the Seahawks Super Bowl.
Yep.
Oh, the Ravens.
The Ravens game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, those are games where you're down. Not only are you down double digits, but you're down double digits in the second half.
Yeah.
And they've come back and they've won the game. So it's like, we've seen this script before. I totally agree with you on Jacksonville. I thought they would give the Patriots a game. They did. My score going into the game was 27-20. You know, it was 24-20. That defense is really good. And I think that defense earned the respect of Tom Brady and the Patriots. And we've seen the Patriots before against that type of defense, Seattle, Atlanta, where it's a really fast defense. They can get after it with the front four and the pass rush. They have good secondary play. And normally what happens is, yeah, Tom's won all those games. And you look at the end of the game and you're like, oh, yeah, he put up some points. But it's not easy. It's a slog. And it normally takes until the fourth quarter for them to really break through when those speedy defenses maybe get a little fatigued. And I thought a big stat was in the fourth quarter, Patriots ran 25 plays. They only ran 9 plays on offense in the third quarter, and they only had 36 plays total through three quarters. So, you know, Brady really wasn't getting an opportunity, and that was Jacksonville. They were taking him off the field. They were doing a great job on third down. But once he could stay on the field and execute, the Patriots offense was able to break through, and you wrote about this. Danny Amendola was a big part of it.
I mean, the guy just, whenever they need someone, Danny Amendola always steps up. He doesn't put up the big numbers throughout the season, but a third down or fourth quarter play inside the red zone, like, Danny Amendola always comes through in the clutch, and he did it again yesterday. That second touchdown, I can't believe he got his 2 feet down. We had a great view of it. It was right in front of us in the press box, and it looked like his momentum was going to carry him out of bounds. So for him to be able to get those 2 feet down was just an incredible athletic feat.
Fake it to White. Looking around. Has time. Throws it. Can he get the feet down? What an effort. Touchdown, Amendola.
Even more remarkable about this comeback, Chris, was the fact that Miles Jack stripped the ball away early in the fourth quarter. I mean, the Patriots gave up a possession, which they, in all those other comebacks, they don't. They're perfect in the fourth quarter. So when Miles Jack strips that ball away, it's just a sense of gloom maybe starts to set in a little bit.
But Miles Jack falls on it, comes up with the football. He's got the football in his hands.
Oh, I think he got it, Jim. I think he actually got it. Did that just happen?
But I wonder if the Patriots need that urgency. They need to be down by 10 in the fourth quarter for the offense to finally start clicking.
So the big story going into this game was obviously Tom Brady's hand injury. It happened on Wednesday in practice on a handoff, and he was not able to practice on Thursday, and there were all these different reports. You know, he got stitches. That was definitely true. There was a report from Albert Breer, our good friend who used to work for the Globe, works for the MMQB, that there was some ligament damage. It was probably the most anticipated warm up in the history of football just to see him throw. He comes out with this little black, I don't mean, what would you call it, a wrap?
A tape or a bandage.
On his hand and the thumb. And then at the end of the day, I know we said it was a C game, basically, and he didn't want to blame the hand. I thought the hand was a total non-story, non-factor.
Yeah, I didn't see it affecting him too much. He took snaps from under center, which was a big key. He wasn't just stuck in shotgun. He threw some darts. I mean, his second throw of the game, that 31-yarder to Cooks down the right seam, that was a laser.
How about the fourth down throw to Amendola where he just drops it in the bucket like exactly. It's training camp where they have that drill where they literally try and throw a football into a bucket from about 30 yards away. It was like perfect, right down the chute.
And the one that Cooks dropped over the middle too was a perfect, you know, bullet right over the middle. So his deep ball looked okay. Brady did not look to be affected. He really... Talk about avoiding worst-case scenario. I mean, he didn't break his thumb. He didn't seem to significantly damage one of the ligaments in his thumb. Yeah, the cut was bad, but it could have been worse. He's getting the stitches out this week. He should be fine for the Super Bowl. It was a total freak injury, and Brady had a great quote. He's like, there's no way that after all this, my season is ending on a handoff on a Wednesday. Like, that's just not happening. So credit to him. Credit to the medical staff for taping it up and throwing some glue in there and whatever they did.
Credit to Alex Guerrero, because he did thank Alex Guerrero for helping him with this injury. So I know there's been a lot of friction, and Alex Guerrero has been at the center of it with the Patriots this year. But Alex Guerrero came through for the Patriots when they needed him.
Well, the Patriots did note on Wednesday that when Brady would be skipping his media availability, he's meeting with our medical staff. He's not meeting with
Sure.
He's meeting with our medical staff today. So I thought that was interesting.
That was it. But after the game, Tom made sure he gave a shout-out to Alex.
The training staff and the doctors and Alex, and it was a great team effort. So without that, I definitely wouldn't be playing.
I don't know if he did the Mr. Miyagi, you know, sort of heal him like he's Danielson in Karate Kid. I don't know what he did, but it worked.
I think they don't want to know. You know, hear no evil, see no evil.
Yeah. So that ended up being a total non-story. But I think what's interesting and what sort of is a story, this situation, is you look at, and Brady referenced it too, you know, this was a team that was 2-2 after the first four games of the year. And one of the primary goats there was Stephon Gilmore. Gilmore makes a great play to bat the pass away from Dede Westbrook, which sort of sealed it on Jacksonville's last possession. And I thought that was emblematic of the Patriots and just a Bill Belichick team, Ben. You know they're going to get better, that whatever the issues are in September, by the time playoff time rolls around, they'll fix those issues. And that was something Brady sort of talked about. And nothing's really handed to you, nothing's promised, but they just keep improving throughout the season. And you look up, and here they are in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that's why you didn't sense too much panic from Patriots fans when they started 2-2. You know, we said it on the podcast when Carolina and Houston have receivers running wide open down the field, like it was a bad look, but we all knew that was correctable. Those weren't skill issues. Those were just coaching issues and teachable moments. And obviously the Patriots were going to get those things fixed. And, you know, it's great to see Stephon Gilmore having a great game and coming up with the play of the day to you know, seal the win. And Brandon Cooks, 6 for 100 yards. You know, in the AFC Championship game. So the guys who have been a little up and down, the newcomers this year, they certainly earned their bones on Sunday. The one guy who didn't was Rex Burkhead. I was looking at the snaps this morning. He only played 3 snaps. So I think, we talk about Gronkowski went out with an injury. Rex Burkhead, too, I think went down early and wasn't able to give them anything on offense. So they were really shorthanded yesterday, and they still came through.
Yeah, the first carry I saw from Burkhead, it looked to me like he was he didn't look like himself. He didn't look like he was running freely. That's something, obviously, to keep an eye on. Quickly, I do want to – you mentioned the defense, and I thought they were sort of the unsung heroes there, particularly in the fourth quarter. 0-5 for Jacksonville on third down. The Jaguars only had 62 total yards. Bortles, 5 of 13, 68 yards. There were some really big third down stops, including right after that, Miles Jack strip of Deion Lewis that you had referenced. That ended up not really hurting the Patriots, at least not from any other standpoint than field position, because it was a 3-and-out basically for Jacksonville there. I know the defense is always maligned, and you still look at it and think, oh my goodness, Blake Bortles threw for 293 yards against them. Like, you know, that's sort of an issue. But at the same time, they just seem to make enough plays when it's required, and they seem to make big plays when it's required.
Yeah, the Jaguars came out and hit them in the mouth, no doubt. They had some good scheme plays and caught the Patriots a little off guard and put up 14 points early. And then after that, the Patriots, they made their usual adjustments and they clamped down. And I think over the final 7 possessions, the Jaguars managed 2 field goals. So 6 points over 7 possessions. That's absolutely a credit to the Patriots' defense. They started shutting down the running game, slowing down Leonard Fournette. I think they held the Jaguars to just 3.2 yards per carry.
Correct, yes.
Which is excellent.
Number one rushing offense in the NFL.
And they stopped just letting they covered the running back out of the backfield and the receivers coming wide open on the bootlegs. I haven't gone back and looked at the film yet, but they clearly, you know, cleaned that up at halftime. And all the credit in the world to this Patriots defense. You know, James Harrison's playing some middle linebacker yesterday, and they're just getting contributions from all different types. Eric Lee and, you know, rookie Dietrich Wise. And I thought Nora Princiati had a great story on Sunday about the front seven and, like, who are these guys?
Real
anonymous group, and they came up big yesterday.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And here's one thing I'll say, too. Those guys are so disciplined, and they execute what Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick want them to do. Jacksonville, I understood you have to play to your strengths, which is running the football, but I don't think you're going to beat the Patriots just running the ball. I know that their personnel is not the greatest, but they're just too disciplined a team. And Jacksonville kept trying to pound it, and they just couldn't make enough leeway. And that sort of put them in some situations, I thought, in the second half where now you're asking Bortles to pick up a 3rd and long. That's not his forte.
No, and I think you'll hear some criticism today about Jacksonville, why they run the ball so much, went conservative at the end. I think field position played a lot into it.
Sure.
On a lot of those drives, they were backed up deep.
Yeah.
And
they're like, Bortles, don't make a mistake.
Exactly.
Don't give him a free touchdown.
Yeah.
And he didn't turn the ball over to his credit. But, again, you're not going to beat the Patriots with 20 points.
No, but, you know, I think, again, this is my details are a little foggy because I was writing towards the end. And
got to get that instant analysis in.
Got to get that instant analysis for everyone to yell at me for some reason. You know, they had a first down run and Fournette got stuffed. And then on second down, Bortles stepped up and hit Allen Hurns over the middle for 20 yards on a nice throw. So it's not like they went totally conservative. I just think the Patriots played the field position game so well that they just kept pinning the Jaguars back deep. And if you're Doug Marrone, I think rightly, you don't want to take too many risks and put the game in Blake Bortles' hands. You still want to – the clock is your friend. You want to grind it out. Leonard Fournette had some good, tough runs in the first half. You want to see if he can pick up some extra yards. So, again, there's going to be some second guessing today of the Jaguars, but this is nothing like the Seahawks or the Falcons games. Like, I don't think the Jaguars blew this as much as the Patriots just won it.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. All right, we're going to take a brief timeout on Season Ticket. When we come back, more with Ben Volen. We'll ask him about Rob Gronkowski's head injury, and also we'll look forward to the Super Bowl matchup with the Philadelphia Eagles. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like season tickets, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, back now with Ben Volen. And as promised, I want to ask you about Rob Gronkowski's injury. This was another factor, I think, in this game, and it really just burnished the Patriots' comeback and Brady's legacy that he goes out and has this comeback in the fourth quarter without Rob Gronkowski, and he's played the whole season without Julian Edelman, his two most trusted targets. Gronk hurt late in the first half, took a helmet-to-helmet hit from Barry Church of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
To Pittsburgh, and this pass is incomplete. It's Barry Church that's going to draw a flag. Barry Church hit him.
Oh, Jim, that's a penalty for sure, but now we got to see if Gronk, if that's definitely a penalty, hit him in the helmet.
Yeah.
No question. Now it's going to be about the concussion aspect. I mean, look, he's kind of walking.
He left with a head injury. They said he was questionable, and then he never came back. How concerned are you about this with 2 weeks before Super Bowl 52?
Well, you never quite know with concussions. Everyone is different. And, like, I was just thinking of Luke Kuechly, the Panthers linebacker. He had a concussion last year that kept him out for, like, 4 or 5 weeks. So you never quite know. And Gronk was clearly woozy. As soon as he tried to get back up, he was stumbling. And the ref immediately went over to him and said, hey, you got to go to the sideline. Interestingly, that's one of the plays that the Jaguars and their fans are kind of complaining about, that it was a perfectly clean hit from Barry Church, and what do you want him to do? He's just playing football, and, you know, another example of the refs cheating for the Patriots, I guess. But I thought it was, even though it looked like he maybe hit him in the shoulder, he still got him under the chin.
Yeah, he did.
Those are the type of hits. It's a bang-bang play. It wasn't dirty, but those are the type of hits they're trying to get out of the game. That said, with 2 weeks in between games, I imagine Gronk should be fine.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's unfortunate, really, because I think one of the hallmarks of this season for Gronkowski has been his health, right? I mean, he played in 14 games. One of them he was suspended. The other one was the Thursday night game against Tampa Bay, where it seemed like it was more precautionary that they kept him out than anything else. So his health has been great this year, and he's working with Alex Guerrero, and he's sort of on the TB12 method and all that stuff, and he gets hurt, and it's not his fault. I mean, that was a bang-bang play there. I didn't think it was a dirty play. I agree with you on that. But the Patriots have been here before, where you're in the playoffs and you're not sure if you have Rob Gronkowski, or you're going into a Super Bowl like Super Bowl 46 against the Giants, and you don't know at what level Rob Gronkowski will be at. So it just seems like, you know, the way Gronkowski plays, how physical he is, how big he is, what a big target he is, he just takes a lot of big time shots. And I think it's hard to stay healthy through an entire season when you play the way he plays and you're that size and you're that big of a target. And people know they have to bring the lumber to knock you down.
Yeah, no doubt. This notion that he's injury prone, like, it's not his fault. You know, he gives his all for the Patriots. And Gronk was phenomenal this year. He gave the Patriots everything he had, and it paid off for him. He got all his incentives. It paid off for the Patriots. Here they are going to the Super Bowl. But once he went down, that's when I felt it was really starting to look ominous for the Patriots. You know, last year when they came back against the Falcons, obviously Gronk wasn't playing, but they still had Edelman.
Yeah.
And this is a very talented Eagles defense that they're about to face in 2 weeks. So they really need Gronk back, because this Eagles defense can probably win the game single-handedly, even without Nick Foles putting together a great game.
Yeah, so it's the Philadelphia Eagles in Super Bowl 52. That means there will be no home team in the Super Bowl, as the Vikings went down 38-7 on Sunday to the Eagles in Philly. How do you see this matchup, Ben, between these two teams? You just referenced the Eagles' defense. I think, again, that you have some of the components to bother Brady. They have guys that can get after the passer, and Brandon Graham, Vinny Curry, Chris Long, a familiar face for Patriots fans.
Fletcher Cox
is outstanding as well. And they have a pretty good secondary with some veteran safety play.
Yeah, and, you know, offensively, I think they can run the ball very well. We'll see a lot of our guy, LeGarrette Blount, in a couple weeks.
LG.
Yeah, Chris Long and LeGarrette Blount, back-to-back Super Bowl appearances with different teams. Would be curious to know how often that's happened in NFL history. So 2 weeks of Chris Long and LeGarrette Blount, get ready for that. 2 weeks of reliving the Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl with Donovan McNabb throwing up all over the field. That should be a lot of fun.
I think it was just dry heaving.
Excuse me, dry heaving.
It's the same thing. I'm joking.
And bad clock management. But yeah, you know, it's going to be a very similar game to what we saw yesterday. Obviously, the Eagles don't have much of a quarterback in Nick Foles, but they had a great game plan. They still put up 38 points. I think Doug Peterson's a pretty good offensive coach. They're going to have 2 weeks now to scheme it up, and they've got an excellent defense. So it's going to be about stopping the run and making sure that you know, they stay disciplined and don't let receivers run wide open. And again, I like the Patriots in this one. I saw the opening line was 6.5. It came down pretty quickly to 5.5, but obviously Vegas and America and the that community is big on the Patriots, and I am as well. I think it's a good matchup for them, but the Eagles are tricky, and just because Nick Foles is their quarterback, this is not going to be a walkover.
Yeah, I mean, this game I think would have a lot more marquee value if you had Carson Wentz, who I think was on track to be the MVP before he tore his ACL against the Los Angeles Rams. You do have to give Foles credit. Like you said, he played really well on Sunday, threw for more than 300 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game. However, if you told the Patriots at the beginning of the season, you can win a Super Bowl, you can lift the Lombardi Trophy, you have to beat Marcus Mariota, Blake Bortles, and Nick Foles, I think they would have been doing cartwheels back in training. They would have done cartwheels up that hill that Belichick makes them run up in Foxborough for training camp. That's ideal, I think, and that works in their favor.
Shaughnessy called it a few weeks ago. He said it always lines up for the Patriots. Things always fall into place.
Always breaks the Patriots' way.
Always, and here we go, as you said.
However, you know, look, the Eagles are confident going into this game, and the last time they played the Patriots in 2015 at Gillette, they got the victory. Chip Kelly was the coach back then, but they still have some of the same players, including Malcolm Jenkins, their veteran safety, who is pretty confident about this situation for the Eagles. He said, the Patriots have been in this game so many times that I think we all look at them as kind of the gold standard of this league. And so in a season where we've been doubted all year, for me, it's just right on par to be able to go against a team that has such a legacy as the Patriots. But that's just part of the story. When we finish this out and we come back Super Bowl champions, that will just be the exclamation point on this whole story. Do you think Malcolm Jenkins is familiar with one Freddie Mitchell, who ran his mouth off the last time the Patriots and the Eagles met in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 39?
I'm sure Malcolm will be getting a history lesson this week, if not from his organization, then from the media, who will remind him about Freddie Mitchell. I mean, whatever. If you want to call that bulletin board material, that's fine. I think Malcolm Jenkins was excited after winning a big NFC championship game. His team was a home underdog twice. That's never happened for a number one seed. And they came out and took care of business, especially yesterday. They were down 7-0 and then rolled off 38 straight points. So, you know, good for the Eagles, and they should have some confidence right now. And look, if Patriots want to get upset and use that quote as motivation, go ahead. But, you know, I think that's pretty normal competitive talk, especially for someone who just finished off a pretty exciting game.
Well, here's the other key for the Eagles. Make sure Bill Belichick does not get a copy of the plans for the Super Bowl victory parade, because that happened last time these teams played. And in the meeting, Belichick read off the itinerary for the Eagles' planned Super Bowl parade to his players right before the Super Bowl.
Let me just read you a little something here. I thought this was kind of interesting. First, I thought it was, I couldn't believe it, but it's actually true. I'm talking about the Philadelphia parade after the game. All right, it's 11 o'clock, in case any of you want to attend that. It's going to go from Broad Street.
It's classic. It's classic Belichick. So, to go back to just the X's and O's of it, Ben, you mentioned the defense. We talked about that. Offensively, though, how concerned are you about the Eagles' wide receivers and tight ends? I mean, Zach Ertz at tight end is very good. Alshon Jeffrey's a big, big target. Torrey Smith's a speed guy. Sometimes that gives the Patriots trouble. And Nelson Agholor is a really elusive guy who they can get the ball to in a number of ways. And you've seen more of Philly than I have. I sort of defer to you on this, but watching a little bit of that game yesterday, they have some of the same actions and formations and plays that the Kansas City Chiefs used in the season opener, some of that jet sweep stuff. So does that concern you at all?
Yeah, I would say the scheme is more concerning than the players.
Okay.
And not because the players are bad, but because the quarterback is limited.
Okay.
If they have Carson Wentz, then, yeah, I'm really concerned about the wide receivers. It's going to be similar to yesterday. The Jaguars, Blake Bortles completed passes to 10 different receivers, and their guys got open, but it was more based on scheme than necessarily winning one-on-one matchups. And they left a lot. The Patriots left a lot of their cornerbacks on islands, you know, just one-on-one and handle your guy. And I think you'll see the same against the Eagles. Again, I haven't studied them too much. We'll have plenty of time over the next 2 weeks to do that. But, yeah, the misdirection, the bunch plays, the jet sweeps, bootlegs, the Eagles have to make up for their lack of talent at quarterback with a lot of kind of gimmickry and misdirection. And the Jaguars really hit the Patriots hard with that in the first half and did a great job. There were so many wide-open receivers. And then the Patriots adjusted and you know, got that fixed for the second half. So it's going to be the same against the Eagles. Just you have to be really disciplined, and it's hard to prepare for everything, but you know, the Eagles are going to throw the kitchen sink at you early, and you've got to just withstand it and make sure you don't let them break off a 70-yard run.
Yeah, and the Eagles also love those RPOs, run-pass option plays. That's a big staple of their offense from what I've seen. So I think when I look at that, you need a big day from those Patriots cornerbacks, the type of day that you got yesterday, really, if they're going to slow down the Eagles.
Interestingly, so the Patriots have their top three corners, two of them are big and physical, Gilmore and Rowe. And we all know Rowe is the number three corner. So looking at those Eagles receivers, you would probably put Gilmore on Alshon Jeffrey. That's an obvious one. But then you have two burners in Torrey Smith and Nelson Agholor. And so who do you put Malcolm Butler on? And then Eric Rowe is not a burner. Usually okay. When you want to, for the quicker types, that's where Jonathan Jones comes in, and now he's on IR. So that'll be interesting to see how the Patriots match up with that third receiver because they don't have a speedy corner right now. It's Eric Rowe or Johnson Batamosi, neither of whom are burner-type corners. They're both big and physical. So that'll be an interesting matchup to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think back to last year's Super Bowl and Malcolm Butler on Taylor Gabriel, who's a real speed guy. That didn't go so well. He didn't look so great in that game.
No, so this will be an interesting matchup for the Patriots cornerbacks, and that'll be something to watch for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have 2 weeks to break this one down. I think we're all going to be experts in the Philadelphia Eagles, relatively speaking, by the time this game rolls around on February 4th. Ben, thanks for coming in and discussing the Patriots and their 8th Super Bowl appearance under Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Thanks. We're on to Minnesota.
On to Minnesota, absolutely. All right, that's Ben Volen of the Boston Globe. You can find him on Twitter at Ben Volen. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you've enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you later.